A1, the hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. These are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, I will bring you the health and lifestyle report. I will talk about an unusual treatment for a deadly type of brain tumor. Then, Dan Friedel brings us a story about dinosaurs. Then, Katie Weaver and Alice Bryant tell us about wind energy and the growing competition around the world to create it. We will end the program with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, the Health and Lifestyle Report. From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. For many years, a deadly type of childhood cancer has escaped science's best treatments. But now doctors have made progress with an unusual treatment. They inject a virus into the brain to infect the tumors. This causes the body's immune system to attack. Many children treated this way lived more than twice as long as patients that did not have the treatment. Doctors reported this news Saturday at an American Association for Cancer Research conference and in the New England Journal of Medicine. The Associated Press reported on the findings. Although in the end, most of the children died of their disease, a few are alive and are doing well over a year after treatment. This is something unheard of in this situation. This is the first step, a critical step, said the leader of the study, Dr. Gregory Friedman. He is a childhood cancer specialist at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Friedman added that their goal is to improve on this latest finding. He said that first they will use this new treatment as soon as the tumor is found. They also plan to combine this treatment with other treatments, he said, to increase the effectiveness of the body's immune system. The patients in the study were given the experimental treatment after other treatments failed to help their illnesses. The study involved gliomas. They make up 8% to 10% of childhood brain tumors. These tumors are usually treated with operations, chemotherapy, or radiation. However, they often come back. Once they return, survival averages just under 6 months. In such cases, the immune system has lost the ability to find and attack the cancer. So scientists have been looking for ways to make the tumor a fresh target. To do this, they turned to the herpes virus. It creates a strong immune system response. A company based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, called Triover, developed the treatment. Researchers there genetically changed or modified the virus so it would infect only cancer cells. Doctors gave the modified virus to 12 patients, ages 7 to 18. In all of them, their cancer had worsened after usual treatments. Half also received one treatment of radiation. Radiation is thought to help the herpes virus spread. In 11 of the 12 patients, imaging tests or tissue samples showed that the treatment was working. Average survival was just over a year. That is more than 2 times longer than in the past. As of last June, 4 of the patients were still alive, at least 18 months after treatment. Tests also showed high levels of specialized immune system cells in their tumors. This suggests that the treatment had created help needed from the body to attack the disease. No serious safety issues were seen. Jake Kessler had the treatment when he was 12. It went very well. He lived for 1 year and 4 months after that, said his father, Josh Kessler. This gave his son enough time to celebrate his bar mitzvah, go with his family to Hawaii, and see a brother be born. Jake died April 11, 2019, but his father told the AP that they have no regrets whatsoever about trying the treatment. He and his wife have started a foundation, Trailblazers for Kids, to continue this research. However, the findings need to be confirmed in a larger study. Doctors are now planning such a study. Friedman said studies are continuing in adults as well. He added that there are plans to try this treatment on other types of childhood brain tumors. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo. Next, we hear from Dan Friedel. Just how many T-Rexes were there?
A new study suggests that up to 2.5 billion Tyrannosaurus rex dinosaurs lived on Earth over a period of a few million years. However, the research shows that not many of these powerful creatures lived in the same place at the same time. Tyrannosaurus rex, commonly known as T-Rex, existed on Earth for millions of years. Scientists involved in the study estimate about 2.5 billion of them lived over a period of 2.4 million years. The dinosaurs mostly lived in the area of the world now known as North America. A team at the University of California at Berkeley came up with a method to estimate how many T-Rex, called the Dinosaur King, had ever lived. The findings were recently published in the journal Science. The method aimed to establish a relationship between body size and population density. The scientists based their research on the theory that the larger an animal is, the smaller its population will be. To come up with an overall number, the team considered the dinosaur's body size, sexual maturity, and energy needs. Experts say it is the first time that such an estimate has been made. some scientists who study dinosaurs said they are very interested in the new findings. Christy Curry Rogers is a paleobiologist at McAllister College. She said she did a double take when she saw the number. Charles Marshall was the main writer of the study. He is the director of the University of California Museum of Paleontology. "That's a lot of jaws," he said. "That's a lot of teeth. That's a lot of claws." The researchers said a city the size of Washington, D.C. would likely have had only two T-Rex living in the area. They estimated that around 4,000 would have lived on a piece of land the size of a large state like California. The estimates are useful for scientists who study dinosaurs because it helps them understand the percentage of T-Rex bones or fossils that have survived. Marshall said there have only been about 100 identifiable T-Rex fossils ever found. That means that if there had only been 2.5 million of the dinosaurs, humans might never have learned about them. The scientists considered that a T-Rex lived about 28 years and that it had food needs somewhere between a large lizard and a lion. Since all the numbers are just estimates, the scientists say the results are not perfect. They think it is possible the actual number of T-Rex was somewhere between 140 million and 42 billion. The middle number is about 2.4 billion. Some people may question why scientists choose to research animals that lived so long ago. James Farlow, a geology professor from Purdue University, offered his opinion. He said he believes the study is important, but also, this kind of thing is very cool. I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. Next is Katie Weaver and Alice Bryant. They will talk about wind energy and the competition to make it.
Governments worldwide are expected to seek more proposals for wind power stations to produce electricity in coastal areas this year. The new international wind power developments could produce more than 30 gigawatts of electricity. That is almost as much as the 35 gigawatts currently produced around the world. Some industry experts say the business environment for wind power is very competitive. Several European oil companies, including Total, BP, and Shell, plan to quickly expand their renewable energy businesses. They aim to reduce dependence on oil and gas production to satisfy investors who want long-term business plans that result in less pollution. Many governments are also ordering electricity companies to meet increasingly lower pollution targets.
Big oil companies are entering the renewable power market, although it is less profitable than traditional operations. Earlier this year, BP and German company EnBW paid a record price for development rights to two offshore areas that could produce 3 gigawatts of electricity. The sites are near the coast of England, Wales, and Northern Ireland. The developers pay a yearly amount before making a final investment decision. The payment for BP and EnBW will amount to almost $1.4 billion made in 4 yearly payments for rights to the areas. Offshore wind power developers Iberdrola, Ørsted, and SSE all confirmed to Reuters that they had unsuccessfully sought the contract.
Some experts say the high fees threaten the cost reductions the industry has gained over the past 10 years. Mark Lewis is with BNP Paribas, a French banking group. He said the recent fee deal would add around 35% to project development costs. BP said the fee was reasonable considering the area of the sites in the Irish Sea. He said they are not in deep water and are close to land. The company said the conditions at the sites will permit shorter, less costly connection wiring. But some in the industry have expressed concern. Ben Backwell is chief of the Global Wind Energy Council, an industry group. He said there are not enough projects to meet demand. So you are going to create an overheated market when what we want to see is more opportunities made available, he said. Julien Pouget is a renewable energy expert with the French oil company Total. He said the technology is developing quickly. He noted announcements about larger wind turbines. He said the development makes his company hopeful about cost reductions that will make operations profitable. Britain oversees the development contracts. The country guarantees producers a minimum price for electricity. But because industry costs are falling, the guaranteed price is now the lowest it has ever been, 30% lower than in 2017.
Britain is the world's largest offshore wind market. It is estimated that 10 gigawatts of electricity can be produced there. European countries, including Denmark, Poland and France are expected to hold competitive sales of development rights, called auctions, this year. Spanish energy company Iberdrola is already involved in development proposals in the American states of Rhode Island and Massachusetts through its U.S. group, Avangrid. BP agreed to pay $1.1 billion in a deal last year to buy one half of 2 U.S. developments from the Norwegian company Equinor. In Asia, Japan plans to develop up to 10 gigawatts of offshore wind electricity by 2030. The country plans to expand that amount to 30 to 45 gigawatts by 2040. Iberdrola bought Japanese developer Acacia Renewables last year. It said it plans to take part in the sales in Japan. However, experts warned that new areas cannot expect high prices for development rights, also called seabed leases, and they cannot expect to offer price guarantees as low as Britain's. Backwell of the Global Wind Energy Council said the industry in Asia and in the U.S. is still developing. He said, each region has to build up its own industry and skills before they can expect to see the most competitive prices. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History from VOA Learning English. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly. Today, Jonathan Evans and I tell about the presidency of Barack Obama. He served two terms, from 2009 to 2017. He was the country's 44th president. Barack Obama had campaigned on promises of hope and change. Obama was able to meet those promises, in part, on the night of his election, simply because he was the first African-American president. Historian Michael Nelson is a professor at Rhodes College in Tennessee. He is also an expert on U.S. politics and the presidency.
There's a very famous photograph of Obama in the Oval Office, bending over so that a little boy, a little African-American boy, can rub his hair and notice that the president's hair felt just like his did. That was a moment when millions of Americans who had never seen anybody who looked like them in the White House could look and say, well, it's happened. That's now within the realm of possibilities.
But while Obama's election marked a big change in American history, Michael Nelson uses a different word to describe Obama as president.
Barack Obama was about as steady as they come. Not emotional, not impulsive, thoughtful, deliberate. For the most part, Obama was consistently the same from day one until the very end in terms of the way he conducted himself in office. And, of course, the presidency being a kind of fishbowl, the whole country was seeing that on a daily basis for 8 years.
When he first took office, Obama faced ongoing conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq and a struggling economy at home. The issues were so urgent that he spoke about them in 2009 in his first speech as president.
Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age.
In answer to these issues, Obama and his advisors developed plans to fight terrorism and ease U.S. involvement in the Middle East. In 2011, U.S. Special Forces killed the leader of the Al-Qaeda terror group, Osama bin Laden. He had organized a number of terrorist attacks around the world, including those carried out against the United States on September 11, 2001. Also in 2011, Obama declared the U.S. military was ending its involvement in the Iraq War. In 2014, he announced plans to withdraw U.S. combat troops from Afghanistan by the end of 2016. At home, Obama's administration was facing another kind of emergency. Several American banks had already failed. Other banks and industries were at risk, not just in the United States, but around the world. A major economic depression seemed possible. In answer, one of Obama's first acts as president was to sign a large spending bill known as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The measure reduced taxes for some families and paid for improvements to roads, bridges, and other infrastructure.
Also in 2009, the Obama administration approved a federal loan to save some major car-making companies from financial ruin. Without the money, the companies said they would have been forced to cut jobs and would have trouble making payments on debt. Many Americans opposed the administration's actions. Some argued against government spending. Others objected to saving businesses, while everyday people lost their homes or savings. But historian Michael Nelson defends Obama's actions.
Because the crisis never occurred, it's sort of hard for people to appreciate how close we came and how important it was to stimulate the economy and shore up the banks and reassure creditors and debtors and mortgage owners and everybody else that the government was on top of things and the economy was not going to sink to the very bottom.
Election of Barack Obama and the work of his administration was followed not only in the United States, but around the world. Less than 8 months into his presidency, the Norwegian Nobel Committee surprised many people by naming Obama as the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. It praised him for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples.
Obama was often described as a calm, unemotional leader. Yet the American public came to see another side of him. During his White House years, he often spoke to the nation after difficult or sad events. In 2013, two bombs exploded as runners neared the finish line at the Boston Marathon in Massachusetts. Three people were killed and more than 250 injured. Immediately after the attack, Obama spoke to reporters.
Make no mistake, we will get to the bottom of this, and we will find out who did this. We'll find out why they did this. Any responsible individuals, any responsible groups will feel the full weight of justice.
That concludes the first part of our story about the presidency of Barack Obama. Join us tomorrow for the rest of the story with The Making of a Nation.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.